views on this program are opinions of dentist industry experts and do not constitute personal financial advice. This program is furnished by Dentist Advisors, a registered investment advisor. You're tuned into Dentist Money Industry Expert Series. Now here's your host, Reese Harper.
Welcome to the Dentist Money Show here on an expert edition at the Boston Dental Convention. I am here with a couple of new friends that we've met that we think can add a lot of insight. Amber Orlando and Carmela Broth from Debt Management Inc. And today we're going to focus a little bit on some tips, some insight into bad debt and collections, and maybe have you take away a few things that you can use in your practice. So I'd like to thank you guys for coming on, first of all.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, it's awesome. So let's have you both kind of, let's start with Amber. You can give a little bit of your background, and then Carmela will have you kind of share a little bit of your background as well.
Okay, perfect. I've been with the company now 14 years. Wow. I started off telemarketing for about a year and a half and then moved on the phone. So I was a bill collector for 11 years. After that, I transitioned into client services, and that's what I've been doing. And it makes a difference because I've actually worked in every aspect pretty much of the company. So when I talk to dentists, I can give them a first hand of what's going to be said on the phone, what we're going to do from the first phone call to now up until to the client end of it.
That's awesome. Cool, it's a lot of background, and you've been there for 14 years. That's a lot.
Yeah.
Nice work.
Thank you.
You stuck it out.
Yep, still going.
Yeah. Okay, Carmela, tell me a little bit about your background.
So my background is I've been working with small and large businesses. Started off in marketing and advertising, the beginning of my career, getting customers in the door. I've been with Debt Management now, Director of Business Development, for over 3 years, and my job is to make the customer slash patient responsible for the product or service they're receiving.
Cool. So where are you guys from anyway? Are you from, you're not from New England, or where are you from?
We are. You can't both tell by our accents.
So I was going to say both of you, one of you sounded like you were for a minute, and then, hey, did you both grow up here?
I'm from Massachusetts, born and raised.
Oh, okay. And I'm born and raised Rhode Island, however, I have transitioned and I live in Massachusetts.
There's not a different accent for Rhode Island than...
Park the car and have it yet.
Okay, nice. That's awesome. Okay, so let's start by hitting a really, like a major question, which would be, what's one area, we'll start with both of you because I bet you have different answers to this. Amber, what's one thing that you see that dentists do that might create a problem, or what's one problem that dentists have with debt and collections that you see most commonly, you know?
The biggest thing I would say is the dentist or the office thinking that they can do it themselves. And I always say, if something happened with your copy machine, you might take a look at it, but then you're going to call in a professional. Something, you know, if a pipe broke, you're going to take a look, but then you're going to call in someone to take care of it. So from what I see on my end is a lot of the offices think that they can handle it themselves, and they can't. And it's not what the dentist went to school for. It's not what they invested their time and their money and their, you know, sweat equity. It's what we do. So that's one thing I'd have to say. The other thing would be not realizing when it's time. It's time to say, okay, we need help with this.
So they just don't check their management software to see where their receivables are at and when something's at 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, like, you know.
It could be that, or it could be, you know, they know the patient. They look at the treatment.
Okay.
They see them coming in. They're familiar. They talk about, you know, kids and everything. So it's hard
it's
to separate the business part of it. So they'll look at it as, well, that's my patient, but no, that's your paycheck.
Mm-hmm. And you'd say the first part you said that it's hard to do themselves. What if they want to, like, have someone in their office kind of run that part of it or something? What's the risk in that, or is there... is there a value in doing that at some level, but then bringing in a professional when it's outside the scope of kind of basic collections? You know?
There's always a value of trying to handle it in our office. You want to try to fix it there if you can. But when it becomes an issue, you have to have someone that knows what they're doing. And when it's a third party intervening, the doctor can step out of it. They can say, nothing personal, but this is what's going on. This is who you have to talk to. And the bottom line is nobody really wants to talk to a bill collector. So
yeah.
When people get a letter or they get a call, it does weigh a lot more than just the office calling, because it's a learned behavior. They unfortunately learn that you're just going to send me a statement, you're just going to send me a bill, I can still come in and be seen, and we're going to keep going until I say. But once we get involved, it's okay, it's serious, how do I handle it?
So the third party getting involved kind of adds a little bit of freak out moment. It's a little bit of a separation between the friendly office staff.
And right. Right. And the way we do it, I mean, we keep the patients and our clients' integrity in mind. So a lot of the times we'll collect it and then they'll ask if they can come back. And that's what you want. So if we collect it and can salvage the relationship, we've done our job.
Carmela, what do you think? Is there anything you'd like to add to that, or a mistake that you see offices make that's maybe just something to add to that or something different?
Well, to reiterate what Amber was saying in the regards of the, you know, doctors, the dentists getting involved, we deal with a lot of practices where they have been practicing for 10, 20, sometimes over 30 years, and they feel there is the relationship with the patient. I care about that patient. And, you know, we have to kind of say, you know, doc, no disrespect, they don't care about you. If they cared the same way about you, they would be paying their bill. They left here with a beautiful smile. They're not in pain anymore. Where's your money? Mm-hmm. You know, these doctors, dentists, they all go to school to take care of the patient. That's great. That's what their specialty is. I can't go into, you know, and take care of somebody in the chair. However, what we do is the collection side. So, yes, take care of the 90, 120 yourself. And then if it gets to be where the repetitiveness of sending out statements is just not working, get the third party involved. The severity of the debt goes way up.
Okay, what do you guys think is a good red flag, like in terms of if I'm at 90 days, 90 to 120, I still handle it myself. Like, when do I get somebody involved? Is 120 a good mark? What do you guys usually advise?
So we usually advise 90 to 120 days. Some dentists, because of specialties, they wait a little longer. We really suggest no more than 180 days. And that's where we can send out some nice, less intimidating letters saying to please contact our client. And that's when you should have somebody involved, because you've exhausted your efforts. The dentist practice should work on the here and now and let us work on the other.
Okay, so I'm 6 months out. What's your process look like, Amber? I'm 6 months out and I'm going to now send a nice letter that is kind of a first step, right?
So we do a couple things. When we first go into an office, we're going to look at what is owed the most recent, because that's where you want that right away. That's where if there's any insurance issues, we can handle it. That's if there's a dispute, we go for those, you know, right away. So once we do that, we'll then go back and get the older stuff. Some of the practices have debt that's 2 years past due, and we'll still take that. The stuff that's 6 months, it's going to be assigned to our office. We're going to send out within 2 or 3 days, we're going to send out the initial notice. We're going to send out two more over 45 days. That patient then has an additional 45 days that we're giving them to pay the office, contact with billing information, do whatever is necessary to get it out of collections. If they don't do that, then it goes to collection calls. And then it's a collection matter. It could be a credit reporting matter, and they're going to be called on it.
How often do you guys see offices that don't have good patient intake processes when it comes to documenting, you know, their bad debt procedures? Like, it's what does that look like on the front end? I would imagine that it's pretty mediocre.
I have to unfortunately say we see it every day.
Okay. So out of 10 practices, how many people actually have documented like interest calculations or whatever, or debt procedures? Like, if you see 10 offices, would half of them have it? Or
I would say maybe 4 out of 10.
Okay.
To be fair, and then I'm not discrediting anyone. They, you know, may need to get somebody in there to kind of train them, and that also includes us. We do training to help with the office staff to make sure that there is that right person at the front desk making sure that the copay is collected, that, you know, the out-of-pocket expense is paid the time of visit. But I would say 4 out of 10, and it's unfortunate.
What do you think, Amber, is like advisable on, on bad debt calculations? Like, how should I charge my patient in the first 30 days, the first 60 and 90? What's common, or what's a good rule of thumb?
It's a little tricky now with health insurance. Is a lot more intricate, but more and more practices, and we're advising them to have them pay up front. Don't let them walk away without giving you something. And when they first come in, that's when you have their attention. When they're first coming in to sign in, that's when you want to say, hey, based on the estimate, this is what you're going to owe. So if you want to do this amount now, and then fine, don't do it when they're leaving because they're in a rush. They're going to go pick the kids up. They're going to do whatever else is going on in their life. So we try to tell them to get as much as you can up front. I mean, that's kind of not helping us, but in the long run, it is.
Okay. Do you see, do people charge? Because in the system, when they'll turn, if you guys look in my Dentrix and I turn that over to you and you see all my bad debt, do you just take the amounts that are there and say, that's what we're going to go after? Or should doctors apply an interest expense to those that they had in their intake process, and then you go try to get the full amount? I mean, what do you usually see? Do people just give up on late overage charges and fees or not?
We always err on the side of caution. So one of the big things that we'll do is ask to see their actual patient financial agreement. And as long as it's clearly in their agreement with a set interest rate, which is usually 18%, and as long as it clearly says past due accounts may be subject to collection and attorney fees, the dentist can add on that 18% that's accruing. They can also add on a collection fee to help recoup the cost when we collect it. We absolutely advise that, and it's also good to make the patients aware. If they know if this defaults, you're probably going to owe a collection fee and it's going to go to collections, they're probably going to be less likely to default.
Is each state the same on the mandatory interest that they can charge on late fees?
Every state has its own preset determined interest. Mass is 6%, but if the dentist has a contracted amount, they can charge it as long as it's signed to and agreed.
It's 6% annually is the maximum?
In Mass. If you don't have an agreement, you can do 6%.
Okay.
So if we send an account to our attorney, if we have to, he will then keep the 6% being assessed unless that dentist already had something set, which is usually the 18%.
And it has to be clearly spelled out in the patient agreement.
Biggest thing is documentation.
So out of 10 clients, how many people have a spelled out interest rate in their financial or in their intake paperwork?
I'd say half.
Okay.
Half. I mean, it's... They usually have the 18% because that affects the office on every day, because that's something that they calculate in inter-office, but not many of them have something that covers them for the actual collection and legal fee.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So if I'm a dentist and I'm looking at the easiest thing I can do today to kind of fix or improve my collections and bad debt process, what's one takeaway that I can get today that would make me be able to put something pragmatic into work?
I would think that, like we would say before, is have somebody, number one, at the front desk asking for the co-pays and asking for the patient responsibility, and also to have something in place. So whether it's us or somebody, have someone in place so that when something does go bad, they don't have to search around. Where do I go? What do I do with this? This is, driving me crazy. I have debt. I don't know what to do with it.
Have a protocol.
Absolutely. Have something in place. It's very important. We even deal with a lot of startups where, you do have your CPA, you have your payroll, you have your merchant services, you have your bank. You can also put us into place. I mean, yes, there's no debt there. Obviously, you're just starting a practice. But what's going to happen if something happens 6 months, a year, 18 months down the line, you don't even have to think about it. It's not a second thought. I have debt management and we're going to work with them.
Totally. Amber, anything you'd add to that? What's one thing that you'd say they could implement kind of the low-hanging fruit?
I'm going to have to, Carmela's absolutely right, having a process, whether it be 120 days, 180, have something in place. Don't make any exceptions. Exceptions are what lead to the downfalls. So just have the process in place, and when accounts need to go. I always say we're kind of like an insurance policy for your AR. We have clients that maybe only need us a couple times a month or a couple times a year, but it is so important that when you do, there's no hesitation and everyone in your office knows, nope, you haven't paid, it's past 120 or 160, it's going to collections.
So how do if I'm a dentist, I'm trying to pick between different providers, how do they charge, right? How does one debt collections agency charge compared to another, and how can I compare people in a fair way?
It's pretty standard. Most of the agencies, including us, it's a commission based only on what we collect. If it's the pre-collection or accounts receivable programs, it's some type of flat fee. But it's usually based on a contingency commission rate. So if we don't collect it, you're not charged. The average rate is going to be anywhere from 33 to 40%, depending. I hate to give the whole you get what you pay for type of thing, but that does have a value to it. But it's pretty standard.
Yeah. So if I'm paying a third of my collected debt, I should feel like that's in line, anywhere from 30 to 40% of whatever the agency collects.
However, you want to look at how much they're collecting.
Yeah.
That's huge, because they could, you know, your collection agency could be collecting 18%, 20%, and some practices think that's enough.
Yeah.
Some agencies are collecting much higher.
Yeah, it seems like the pricing's pretty standardized in the industry. It's just a question of how much are you going to collect, and that's where you're really going to get your bang for your buck.
And also, what you're getting out of it. Does it include credit reporting? Are you going to have your own representative that's going to be there, you know, basically whenever you need? Do you feel like you're getting the service? So there's a lot of things that go with it that you want to make sure that you have, too.
So how would you guys say that a larger company like debt management, what value does that bring compared to like a smaller collections agency that somebody might be using locally? What are the resources that are different?
The funny thing is, we are that local collection agency.
Okay.
We're not the national chain. So we're actually, all of our collection calls are done from our offices.
Okay.
So we're not sending calls overseas. We have seasoned collectors that have been in the business 15, 18, 20 some odd years. It's not something where there's a high turnover and we're just pulling people off the street and putting them on the phones.
That's awesome.
So with other collection agencies, you may find that, and that's why the collection recovery rate is lower. And, you know, they're sending calls overseas.
I mean, it's a lot, which if I'm getting a call from overseas, all of a sudden it smells wrong to me. Something seems weird. I don't want to deal with that person. I mean, it's kind of weird, right?
Well, it's not even just the translation. It also has to do with, they may not be familiar with the specific state laws. So, you know, we have to keep up on all of that. And when you're dealing with somebody overseas, it's much more difficult to have to do that. There's no control there.
Yeah. Well, how would you say, I mean, I know you guys service, it sounds like all of your operations are in one location, which is unique. How would you say that's different from other places in the region? And, you know, does that affect your ability to work in California or Seattle or Florida? Like, how does that differ at all?
Our client base, meaning the amount of clients that we have, probably does contend with most of the larger agencies. It's how we do things and the people that we employ that really makes the difference. If I couldn't sit in front of any client and say, look, I was on the phone for this amount of time, I personally vouch for this and that, I wouldn't be doing it. And it's because we do that, and we take pride in everyone that we have on our phone. Our company is run by a family, and we keep it that way. The larger agencies send their calls overseas because of cost.
Yeah.
We could do that, but we would never do that to our clients.
The quality would decline, yeah.
Right.
So how many clients do you guys service across the U.S. right now?
We have approximately 4,000.
That's cool. How many of those are dentists versus doctors, chiropractors, whatever? You know, what does your client base look like?
Well, we have about a 75 to 80% client base is in the medical field.
Okay.
In any specific category. When it comes to dental practices, we're looking at about close to 30%.
Okay.
And it's continued to rise. And I don't know, we've discussed it over and over again. It's a, you know, a health insurance thing, I believe, that more patients are becoming self-pay or, you know, ducking away from their responsibility. So the dentists are coming in at a quicker rate now more than ever.
Yeah, how does the healthcare law changes kind of affect the dental industry as much, though, since that, you know, their insurances are very different from the doctor's offices? Have you guys seen anything happen after the healthcare law was passed?
Yeah, I mean, we're now seeing a lot of our dental practices only taking specific insurances and not participating. One issue that, you know, we have in Massachusetts is a lot of the people use the health connector, and they get their insurance through the health connector, which also they can get dental through it. So the patients are now getting a lot of conflicting information, which is just causing a lot more disputes with debt. So we're seeing kind of the backlash of that with the healthcare changes.
This is super interesting, guys. I really appreciate you taking the time to introduce everybody to these concepts. I think it's a big issue. It's obviously something that our clients want more information about. And how about we just wrap up with how people get a hold of you guys to learn a little bit more?
So you can go to our website, which is www.debtmanagementinc.com. You are more than welcome to call our office. which is area code 508-643-1400. Or you can...
Do you have a newsletter or anything that you guys send out periodically?
So we send out about a quarterly newsletter.
An update?
Yeah,
cool.
Of what we're doing or specific people that we're working with to help in any specific industry. So we do that as well.
Awesome.
And we also have our LinkedIn. You can look us up on LinkedIn as well. Yeah, so there's many different ways. Just if you look us up, and we'll be happy to, you know, give you a call and try to set something up and help you out. Definitely.
All right, we'll put all that in the show notes. Amber, it's really nice to meet you. Camarilla,
thank you very much.
Thanks so much for being on.
Thanks for having us.
It's a pleasure.